Welcome to the First Principles of Medicine podcast. In this series, we will be breaking down complex medical topics into their first principles. When the stress is on and you've just been asked the tough questions you don't know the answer to, we feel you'll be able to fall back on these principles to formulate a decent answer and reason your way out of trouble. Today, we have Jason presenting pleural effusion, and we have a special guest today, Mo, who is a lifelong listener to the podcast. Welcome, Mo. What do you have to say about our podcast?
I've been a lifelong listener, and I've been enjoying it. Helps me on my drives.
I just want to clarify, it's lifelong for the life of the podcast, not Mo's life, right?
So a period of like 2 months.
Yeah, it's lifelong. Yeah, right, cool.
Anyhow, welcome. Love to have you on. If you're a listener right now and you want to be featured on this podcast, please get in touch and we'll see you soon. In the meantime, take it away, Jason.
Cool. So pleural effusion. Let's run through some of the first principles. So to understand pleural effusion, we're going to bring it back to the anatomy of the lung or the anatomy of the pleura. So I'm going to ask some questions. Can anyone tell me what the visceral pleura is? Just a very basic definition.
I reckon you know.
The inner pleural membrane.
Yeah. So it's the membrane which lines the lung.
Yeah.
That's what I think of it.
Viscera means organ, right? I think. Yeah. So it lines the organ and the organ is the lung.
Yeah. Perfect. What about the parietal pleura?
Well, that's in contact with the parietal layer.
Yeah. So that lines the thoracic cavity and it's usually a bit thicker. And it's important to know that it can be subdivided into four different sections. You've got the mediastinal, the cervical, costal, and the diaphragmatic. Not in any particular order, but just know that the parietal pleura can be subdivided into different sections based on the location. And then what do we have in between the visceral and parietal pleura? What is that called?
Space.
Yeah, the pleural space. And that's usually filled with a small amount of serous fluid, which helps lubricate the pleural cavity, helps reduce the friction. Does that make sense to you guys?
That's something else, doesn't it?
Well, probably does, but we're just going to keep it at that. It helps to reduce friction and lube and causes.
It sticks the two sides of the walls together, like by surface tension, so that moving one area changes the other area.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I just thought about it mainly as lubrication,
okay,
of course.
Okay.
And the last bit of anatomy, which I wanted to go through, were spaces called the pleural recess. Does anyone know why they call that or what that means?
Is what you mean, Jason, that the shape of the lung does not stick perfectly against the shape of the cavity,
yes,
such that there's a break between the two sides of the pleura.
So it's just a space, yeah, which is not completely filled up.
Like a gap.
Gap.
Yeah.
Space. Okay. And the one you need to know about is called the costo-diaphragmatic recess, and that's between the costal and diaphragmatic pleura, and it's also called the costophrenic angle. So those two are the same thing, costophrenic angle, costo-diaphragmatic recess. And I'll explain the importance of that later on. Okay, so that's pretty much pleural anatomy done. So now we're going to go through what a pleural effusion actually is. Yeah. It's an accumulation of serous fluid within the pleural space. And I also just wanted to throw in some other terminology. So the accumulation of frank pus within the pleural space, that's called an empyema.
Frank pus.
Oh, just pus, but anyway, I got some definitions.
What does frank mean? Frank's like big pus.
Of course you guys solid, focus on what solid, fucking frank
obvious
means.
So. Yeah, obvious.
Because like it's frank hematuria.
Yeah, frank bleeding.
Oh,
yeah.
So it's macro.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Just okay. Obvious. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And anyway, while we're at it, what is serous? Like, just clear cells?
Well, serous is, you know, serum in the blood is clear. Like, I think that's where the relationship comes from.
Makes sense.
Hey, you guys really want to go down the first principles of every word.
I don't know.
Questions I have always had, you know?
Any questions?
I'll be honest, my only issue every single time they talk about pleural effusion is what's the difference between that and pulmonary edema?
Jason, let's go.
I didn't even talk about that. We'll discuss that at the end, I reckon, because that'll be a good subsection. But we've also got accumulation of blood within the pleural space, and that's called a hemothorax. Okay, so empyema hemothorax is similar to pleural effusion, but a bit different because the substance is different. Next thing I want to go through is that pleural effusion can be categorized into two different types, transudative versus exudative. So transudative effusion, does anyone know what that is?
That's when fluid is pushed through the membrane via increased hydrostatic pressure.
My man, he loves his first principles, okay? So it's essentially what Adrian said, it's an imbalance of the capillary hydrostatic pressures and the capillary osmotic pressures. And if you guys remember Starling equation, that's what Adrian is referring to. So an imbalance of those pressures cause fluid leakage. So there are a few causes which I want you to think about for transudative effusion. Can anyone think of what would cause those imbalances?
Increased production of fluid.
Yeah. So what leads to excess fluid?
Fluid retention.
Yeah. What causes fluid retention?
Heart failure.
Heart failure. That's a very common cause of transudative effusion. What else? There's another organ which can fail and can cause fluid buildup.
Liver or kidney failure.
Liver failure. Yeah. Kidney, our favorite syndrome.
Nephrotic.
Yeah. Nephrotic syndrome. Oh, okay. Yes. Okay. So heart failure.
Is that our favorite syndrome?
Oh, that's my favorite syndrome. Yeah. So does that make sense?
Mo, do you want to give us a little summary? Prove you pay attention.
I mean, from what I'm getting, transudate is obviously fluids leaking into a space, and that's why it's called transudate, transfer of water. And in this case, because it's transfer of water, it's most likely because inside of the original capillary, there's a low amount of protein, and to equalize everything, water is flowing out and into the other space, that way distributing the amount of water so that it's equal on both sides to make up for the low protein.
Yeah. And what are some common conditions which cause that?
The common conditions would be liver failure causing the low protein, or excessive water being heart failure from the fluid overload, kidney failure, limited water excretion, and the other one I forgot.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's more than I remember.
So nephrotic syndrome is kind of like kidney failure. Yeah. So liver failure, heart failure, and nephrotic syndrome. Okay.
Yeah.
So now moving on to the next type, we've got exudative effusion. And this is an effusion caused by increased vascular permeability due to inflammation. So can anyone think of causes of exudative effusion?
Pneumonia.
Pneumonia, right? That's under the infection. And that causes a special type of exudative effusion called parapneumonic effusion. So when you say someone's got a parapneumonic effusion, you mean it's a effusion caused by pneumonia. So that's an important thing to know. So there's another important infection which can cause exudative effusion. Can anyone think about it?
TB.
TB. Yeah, my man knows his
thing. That Dan's on fire today.
He loves his effusion. Good. So TB and pneumonia. Those fall under the umbrella term of infection.
What do they infect the pleura? Or they cause inflammation of the pleura and then the protein leaks out?
I kind of view it more as inflammation causes a change in the permeability.
It is leaking because the spaces are bigger, so things can leak across.
Whereas the trans is more...
Water is being forced across.
Yeah, so transudate is more osmotic kind of hydrostatic pressure.
Yeah, okay.
Malignancy?
Yeah, malignancy. Dan, mate. Yeah, 10 out of... This is a HD student right here.
Yeah. You prepared,
I didn't even know the tell me the body.
So infection, malignant disease. Come on.
Embolism.
Sorry?
Embolism.
Yeah, pulmonary embolism.
Nice.
So three.
More's up there, more's up there.
There's more.
Yeah, there's two more.
Categories?
Yeah, two more categories. Think of your vitamin. So really? autoimmune disease. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. A common one. And the two main ones from autoimmune diseases, can anyone think?
SLE?
Yeah, SLE. Rheumatoid arthritis. But if you just say umbrella term autoimmune diseases, things like SLE, RA, increased risk of exudative effusion. And the last one, which is a bit unrelated, it's an organ below the diaphragm. Can anyone think of it?
Stomach, spleen.
No, you're nearly there. But
pancreas.
Yes, pancreas, right? Because acute pancreatitis can cause a lot of inflammation. And that can actually be a cause of an exudative effusion.
Just pancreatitis?
Yeah. Acute pancreatitis.
Is that because it's a systemic inflammatory thing? Or
yeah, probably. Sounds right.
Are we talking about a pleural effusion due to the pancreatitis?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Why? What did that's you think?
The whole topic's about pleural effusion.
Yeah, just wanted to clarify, because otherwise we can get exudates elsewhere. But
No,
we're talking about pleural effusion.
Not interested in anything else besides the lungs right now.
So the transudative versus exudative effusion, it's an important thing to be able to discriminate between those two things. And the way we figure out whether something's transudated or exudative is through a criteria known as Light's criteria. Does anyone know what that is, or do you want me to just go through that?
Dan knows.
No, I don't.
Well, the reason why I wanted to do this topic was that I've been on wards where the interns have told me that this is a common OSCE topic, and for some reason, Light's criteria is just an easy thing for them to be able to mark you on.
Gotcha.
Like, it's like, can you explain what the difference between transudative, exudative? Like, it's just very easy.
High yield.
Let me just whip it out on MD Calc or something.
Yeah. There are three main things which make up Light criteria. So a pleural effusion is likely to be an exudative effusion if the pleural fluid protein to serum protein ratio is greater than 0.5. The pleural fluid LDH to serum LDH ratio is greater than 0.6, or the pleural fluid LDH is greater than 2/3 of the upper limit of normal serum LDH. I know that's a bit of a mouthful, okay, but it's easier once you...
We will have this
you,
on the Notion page. Don't yeah. worry.
Once you look at the Notion page, it's a lot easier to understand. But essentially, the first point about the serum protein versus the pleural protein, basically there's more protein in the exudative effusion compared with the transudative effusion.
You had a question, Mo?
I was just trying to figure out, LDH is lactate dehydrogenase?
Yes. Okay. LDH refers to lactate dehydrogenase. And that's an enzyme which is normally inside of cells in the body. However, when there's damage to the cells, the LDH leaks out and becomes part of the effusion. Or to further summarize and make it really, really simple, exudative effusion is high in protein and LDH compared with transudative effusion.
High as in it's high in the pleural fluid.
The pleural fluid.
Not the blood. Okay.
The pleural fluid. Yeah.
And it just has to satisfy any one of these criteria for it to be exudative. Is that right?
I'm not sure. Not sure exactly.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Hey guys, just some fact checking. So for LIGHT's criteria, you actually just need to meet one of the three parameters that are stated for it to be classified as an exudative pleural effusion.
Yeah, that's essentially it. Yeah.
Expected levels.
Because basically with the LIGHT's criteria, you're comparing the protein which is in the pleural fluid, which you've aspirated, versus in the blood. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Yeah, lovely. Okay.
So now we're going to go through a nice case to kind of consolidate this knowledge. So I want you to run through an assessment of a patient who's just come into ED, okay? So let's imagine a 57-year-old male has come into ED complaining of shortness of breath after a recent chesty cough. What you going to do?
Let's go, Mo. Let's go.
What's the first step? You know what we'll do here.
Well, I mean, after the history...
No, before the history. Ooh. First mistake. Oh.
Before the history.
The Come first on. Principles.
The first principles would be the A, B, C, D.
Yes. Hey. So A to E assessment, okay? Yeah. Brilliant. Then after that, what do you do?
After that, after we've ensured everything's okay, everything's sorted out, we take a history.
Yes. And for the history, it's important to know that pleural effusion is often asymptomatic. However, if they are symptomatic, you would, of course, get things like dyspnea or shortness of breath. Can anyone think of other things which you'd get if you're symptomatic?
Depending on the cause, you could have cough if they have an infection. If it's like a heart thing or a liver thing, you could have edema.
Yeah, so a lot of things are relevant, right? So try not to overthink it too much. Think of stuff which is common in respiratory exam, right? So if they've got a cough and sputum, that's probably important for determining like the etiology. You're probably thinking they may have a pneumonia. If they've got hemoptysis, maybe thinking, like malignancy. If they've got fever, you know, probably thinking some type of infection. If they've got night sweats, weight loss, that's always cancer.
No.
So this is drilled into my brain. And another thing you probably get is possibly like pleuritic chest pain, because the pleural effusion probably caused some irritation. But keep it general. Mm-hmm. So after history, what do you do?
Well, you go on to examination.
Yes. So there are specific exam signs I want you guys to know about. So let's go through inspection. What are the typical exam sign you would see with a patient with pleural effusion?
Respiratory distress, dyspnea or tachypnea.
Yes, perfect. Okay, that's nasal on inspection. Flaring. Yeah, so signs of respiratory distress, which is probably four or five different things. Mm-hmm. But
would you check the trachea as well?
Yeah.
See if it's deviated or not?
That's on palpation, my friend, okay? Palpation. So what did you say?
You can see tracheal tug.
Oh, you can see tracheal tug, but then you put your finger, it's midline palpation.
But usually, can you even see the tracheal tug unless you're feeling it?
So a sign of respiratory distress on inspection is tracheal tug, which you can see.
But the position of the trachea, you can't tell
until palpation. So palpation, so JT said tracheal deviation.
Yep, midline.
Or now, 50-50 guess. Okay? Pushes. If the pleural effusion is on the right side, let's say it's on the right lung. You don't know this yet, but let's say it's on the right lung. Does the trachea move towards the effusion, like on the right side, or does the trachea move to the left, away from the effusion?
Left, I reckon.
I think it's to the left because there's stuff in the right and it pushes it to the left.
Yeah. So the trachea deviates away from the effusion. So there are two other things that you want to look for in palpation. Bring it back to very basic. Come on, man.
I was going to do upper lobes.
Is that palpation or is that inspection?
That is palpation.
Yeah. Oh, your back. What are you doing?
Come on, what is this?
What is that, posterior?
Symmetrical lung inflation.
So reduced chest expansion.
No, that's the thing at the back.
Yeah, the lower lobes.
Oh, is that the lower lobes? Oh, okay, cool.
So assessing chest expansion. Okay. So you get reduced chest expansion on the affected side. Okay. What's the last thing? This is related to the cardiovascular exam, okay? What do you palpate on the cardiovascular exam?
The heart.
Yes. What do you mean, really? The heart? You don't palpate the heart. Do you?
The apex meat?
Yes. And that would be displaced away from the effusion. So if there's a pleural effusion on the left side, that could cause the apex beat to be displaced.
I don't know where it is.
Okay,
you know,
next one.
In all my years, which is one and a half, or one really, I've never felt an apex beat on a patient. Never.
You're not doing it right. You don't have the feel, mate. No, you've got to have the touch. Okay.
You're just feeling your own pulse.
I can feel myself, but I can never feel anybody else's apex.
Okay, so now moving on to the next one, percussion. This is, in my opinion, the most important sign because it's pretty much pathognomonic of pleural effusion. I haven't seen any other causes of this particular sign on percussion.
Very bold.
Okay. Stony dullness.
Yes, okay. So stony dullness over where the fluid is. I don't know what the hell that feels like.
Well, have
or
you
what
felt,
it sounds
felt
like.
No, I just wrote it on the book.
I remember some clinician telling me that apparently it's more like with the feel, not necessarily the sound.
It feels like stone.
I don't know, but stony dullness equals pleural effusion in my mind. Okay. Next, we're going to move to auscultation. So there are four signs I kind of think of. Can anyone think of those?
Pleural rub.
Yeah, pleural friction rub. I don't know what it sounds like, but I don't know how to describe pleural friction rub. Like, all these sounds are so difficult to describe.
Do this
in the mic. Here we go, Aiden, put it in.
Pleural friction rub. Yep. Anything else?
Reduced air entry into the affected area.
Yep. So reduced or absent breath sounds.
Crackles on the edge, but not at the fluid, I believe.
So you
not
get
the fluid, I don't think.
You get bronchial breath sounds, which are present above the level of the effusion.
Oh, that's what I meant.
But the real one I wanted to go through was vocal resonance. Is vocal resonance increased or decreased? Dan, you look very excited to answer this question.
No, I'm having a thing. I can't remember. I think it's decreased, but I can't remember. I'm not sure.
Yes. So there is decreased vocal resonance with the pleural effusion. And the reason why I bring that up is that it's an important discriminator between pneumonia and pleural effusion, in my opinion, because pneumonias often increase the vocal resonance, because when there's consolidation within the lung, that solid matter helps to conduct the sound.
Yeah.
But because pleural effusion, the fluid is over the lung, essentially, that has the opposite effect. Okay? So reduced vocal resonance. Isn't that cool? Come on. Okay. So now that we've done our clinical assessment, we're going to go and investigate the causes. So what are the investigations we're going to do? Starting off with bedside investigations.
Let's go, Mo. Let's go.
I was going to say needle into the lungs.
Straight away. High heel.
Because the thing is, though, when you've got an OSCE, like, from my understanding, they're going to be like, now, what would you do next? I would start off with bedside investigations, including...
Bedside, you'd go ECG, make sure you rule out any cardiac...
For sure.
Urine sample to see urine output as well as if there's an infection.
Yeah, so ECG, urinalysis... What else?
Take the temperature.
Temperature, very important. Fever. Yeah.
Blood glucose.
Would you get protein in the urinalysis?
If it's a nephrotic cause.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then another important thing was oxygen saturation, because you can see how acutely unwell. Yeah. So these bedside things, like, don't overthink them. Like, think about it logically. It's always the same kind of stuff. ECG, oxygen saturation, temperature, blah, 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 blah. Okay. So now moving from the bedside investigations, we're going to go through like the laboratory tests. So what are the general bloods you're going to order? Spit them out.
FBC.
Yep. And so what are you looking for in FBC?
So you're looking for signs of infection. You're looking for anemia as a possible cause of his
And what's the sign of infection on FBC?
Raised white cells.
Perfect.
CRP, raised inflammatory marker.
Yes. So full blood count and CRP, those are two separate investigations. Mm-hmm. What's the next one?
LFTs.
Why?
Because we said liver failure can cause a transurinative effusion.
Yep.
Would you get an amylase to rule out pancreas?
Yep. So, I think that's more like if indicated. Mm. So we'll go through that in a sec. So full blood count, CRP,
then
what's another
EUC or UEC?
UEC.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
UEC. I always get them around.
Mm-hmm. And why mm-hmm. would you do that?
For kidney factors issues.
Kidney baseline function. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so that I always think of like full blood picture, CRP, UEC, LFTs are your kind of general mm-hmm. bloods. Okay, now we go through like specific investigations if they're clinically indicated. So you mentioned lipase.
That's the one.
So why would you do a lipase?
For acute pancreatitis.
Yep, so exactly. If you're suspecting acute pancreatitis, you of course do a lipase, right? Mm. What else?
If you suspect they had an MI and heart failure secondary to an MI, do troponin.
Yeah, why not?
Cardiac enzymes.
And makes BNP. Sense.
Mm.
Yeah.
For heart failure.
Lactate as well for sepsis.
Yeah,
we have right. to do it. Actually, yeah, if we're going to use LITES criteria, we have to get the serum lactate, right?
Mm. Yeah.
That's a good point, yeah.
I didn't really think, yeah.
Some high yield
right
there.
That's exactly
right?
what I meant
yeah.
by
yeah.
saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we're but, going to do that needle biopsy, fluoro.
We're still going on.
Mate, this is...
Isn't that specialised?
This is a laboratory test first. We'll go through again, the...
That is isn't a lab test.
Sorry?
That is a lab test. I mean, getting it is a bit more difficult.
Anyway, we'll go through... I consider that more invasive procedure.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So we're going through bedside laboratory tests. So the other things I've thought of is like sputum, MCS, yeah. to see what pathogen, autoimmune markers, which would yeah. include what? Can anyone give
Jesus.
Quick example?
DNA, double-stranded DNA.
Yeah.
C3, C4.
Yes.
Yeah, some anti-Smith.
ANA, rheumatoid factor.
Yeah.
Duh. Yeah. Oh, ESR is a good one. I've totally forgot about that one.
You need to go to antibody test. Cause
anyway, the point...
Get the specialist in.
What I was just saying, if it's indicated, things like autoimmune markers, lipase, a valid test,
oh, yeah,
right?
Everything
but you
is
just
indicated.
Have to, you just
be,
have to say that.
Indicated.
This pleural effusion, we don't even know what the cause is.
Yeah, but
general
you often get the cause of things through the history and exam, JT.
True.
Jeez.
True.
Thank you, thank you.
Okay, so we've gone through bedside.
Yep.
We've gone through the laboratory tests. So now we'll go through imaging. What is the imaging test you're going to do?
Plain chest film X-ray. Chest X-ray. Yep, that's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Surely.
So what angle, though? You got to...
Upright AP or PA.
Yeah, and what...
Do a lateral, you might as well. Or...
Yep. So a PA chest X-ray. Mm. And now... We're going to move on to another very important sign. So what is the key imaging sign on
blunting,
a PA chest?
Blunting of the costodiaphragmatic angle.
Yes.
Hence the upright chest X-ray.
That's why he mentioned it.
Perfect. So blunting of the costophrenic angle, or as Aidan said, the costodiaphragmatic recess, is a key sign of pleural effusion. And this is caused due to the presence of the effusion causing loss of adjacent aerated lung for contrast. And it's important to know that usually, the costophrenic angle is sharply defined, but when there's a pleural effusion, it looks blunted.
Because there's fluid there.
Yes, because it's fluid.
Okay, yeah, easy.
And another important thing to know is that it's usually only on a PA X-ray when the effusion is greater than 200 milliliters. So if it's quite a small pleural effusion, it's possible that there is a pleural effusion there, but it's just not big enough to be visible on that type of imaging. Remember that. Another key sign on a PA chest X-ray is the, does anyone know, first of all?
The fissures?
No.
Deviation of the trachea away from the affected site?
Yes, that's one. It wasn't the one I was talking about, but tracheal or / heart border deviation away from the fusion is another sign of pleural fusion on an X-ray. The sign I was asking for is called the meniscus sign.
Mm.
Okay, has anyone heard that?
Oh, it's just the fluid, and then, like, I guess when you go back to basic science class, you see the meniscus in a test tube.
It's like a little U, like a shallow U.
And then you see that on the chest X-ray. Yeah.
So it's a water-dense shadow with curved concave upper border. But that's kind of hard to imagine. So that's why we've got the Notion document and the Ankies, okay? To look and see what unilateral blunting of the costophrenic angle and meniscus sign looks like. Another imaging, which it's called a lateral decubitus chest X-ray. So that's pretty much a chest X-ray when you're lying on your side. And that is supposedly more sensitive for detection of fluid collections than a PA chest X-ray. Okay. And the last imaging, can anyone guess what that is? It's not X-ray.
CT?
No.
Ultrasound.
Ultrasound, right?
Yeah.
So that's really useful for confirming the effusion.
It's fluid.
And for also planning the aspiration later on. Because ultrasounds are quite quick and easy to do relative to other imaging. So now that we've gone through the bedside, the laboratory tests, the imaging, we're going to go through the invasive investigations. So there's one...
Let's go, Mo.
What's that? One classic
what are we
one.
What are we doing?
You've been waiting the whole life for this.
Stick a needle.
Yeah, stick a needle. Okay. or ultrasound guided pleural fluid aspiration analysis.
Yep.
Or stick a needle.
Wasn't
it called thoracentesis? Is that?
Yes.
Is that what I'm thinking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's also called thoracentesis, but in my mind, it just makes a lot more sense to say pleural fluid aspiration.
How?
Because in an exam, am I going to remember the exact word for pleural fluid sampling?
I guess you should be, yes.
By the time you finish saying
you wouldn't
that
say,
young
like,
time.
Cut up half the bowel for a partial...
But I'll just forget what the word is. I'm going to remember in an exam, I'm going to aspirate the pleural fluid and analyze
it. Stick a needle in there.
Can you say FNA?
Fine needle aspirate? I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Isn't that only for like breasts and like lumps?
Well, yes. I'm just wondering if it's interchangeable.
I'm not sure.
Because it's a fine needle?
I think this is a lot more, like you get a lot more fluid.
Could you like full syringe it up? Right?
Yeah.
Whereas the other one's just like a, pull it up.
It's a cool thing to watch when you see them. Because you get them to
the
like.
Same thing with like ascites? Because you know ascites, we want to turn them around on the lateral side to test for the shifting dullness, right? So is it in the same principle? You're trying to shift the fluid.
I don't know. I just read this.
Probably with that lateral decubitus thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I just read that.
That's
more sensitive.
And then while you aspirate, you also turn them to their side, don't you? Or
no.
You
know?
Or you let them lie on their back?
I've seen them do the aspiration. Usually you get them to sit on the edge of a bed and kind of lean forward.
Oh, okay.
But I'm not sure on
the
technique.
From the front or the back?
From the back.
But I imagine they'd be aiming for that costo diaphragmatic recess with the juicy spot, right?
Yeah. Oh, and that's by gravity then.
Okay. So when they get the fluid, so they aspirate this fluid out of the pleural space, and then they analyze it, okay? So they analyze like the biochemistry, which looks at the protein, glucose, pH, LDH, amylase. They look for any bacteria, which is in the pleural space. So you do the MCNS on those. You look for cytology, like what cells are in there. You also look for immunological factors, such as like rheumatoid factor, ANA. But essentially, I think for us at this level, we just need to know light's criteria.
I think that's the best to remember.
Yeah, because otherwise it goes way too in-depth with the different types of...
For sure. I'm still like 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. And there's one other invasive investigation. And you do this when the fluid analysis is inconclusive. Can anyone think what that is?
If you take a biopsy?
Yeah, a biopsy of the of the pleura.
Mm. Oh.
Okay.
Pleural tissue.
Well, maybe that's the cause of it, or I'm not particularly sure.
It's not
but
a
if the fluid analysis, like, they still can't really figure out what the cause of it is, then they just do a biopsy of the pleural.
It's hella thin, no?
Well, if it's inflamed, it's probably a bit thicker than it should be.
Wow, okay.
Do they always use an ultrasound to do it as well?
Probably, yeah. I assume they do that, yeah.
Nah,
I think
going by feel, man.
Yeah, so I think the pleural biopsy is probably ultrasound guided.
Yeah.
But 50 years ago, who knows, man? They probably just did it based off feel and touch.
Technically, you can, right? Because people, when you cannulate, you can feel when you...
Just because you technically can doesn't mean
you should
do it.
You see, like spinal blocks? It's just like, that feels like where the space goes, and you just stick a needle.
Right, but you can test it, like, because fluid comes out, right?
No, they feel a pop.
But the idea behind, like, can you trust your anatomical knowledge so much?
That's something which scares me. Yeah.
Vertebrae. I'm feeling the spinus here.
Investigations are done, right? So now we're just going to go briefly over the management. There are two key steps, okay? What's the first step?
Treat the cause.
No, before that.
Identify the cause.
Stabilize?
No. Therapeutic drainage of the pleural fusion.
Symptomatic relief.
Yeah.
Is that what you think?
So you just drain the fluid.
Right. Okay.
Or I don't know how much they drain, but I would say therapeutic drainage of the pleural effusion. Okay. The next thing what Daniel said was treatment of the underlying cause. Mm. So that's why light's criteria is very important, because it can help you figure out what the cause is in conjunction with the history and exam. So you're done. That's management done.
Is pleural effusion an acute thing?
I think it depends on the cause. Sometimes it can just gradually build up, or sometimes it can be a major event.
And I assume you'd only drain it if the patient's in, respiratory distress or something.
Yeah. Like anything, you got to weigh up the pros and cons.
Lovely.
Okay. The three key takeaways I wanted you guys to learn was pleural effusion can be classified into exudative or transudative effusions based off light's criteria. Stony dullness is the key exam sign of pleural effusion. And lastly, unilateral blunting of the costophrenic angle is the key chest x-ray sign of pleural effusion. I reckon if you know those three things, you can sound really smart at least. May not know what all those things mean, but you sound smart.
Wait, so they ask you about kidney failure. It's like, let me talk to you about pleural
effusion. And Light's criteria, it's kind of hard to say over the podcast, but if you just look at the Notion page and the Ankies and just learn those numbers, you'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. Or go to mid-calc and look up Light's criteria as well.
Yeah, you should just know it in your
head. Now, in your OSCE, that's a good question. Let me just pull up MD-calc and Light's criteria for you.
I'm
buddy.
Just going to Google it during the OSCE. That's a reality, though.
You'd say, I would confirm this, but...
I'd refer to therapeutic guidelines.
In fact, watch me confirm it right now.
Does anyone want to quickly run through what Light's criteria is?
Yes, I remember.
Let's go, Mo.
I remember the numbers.
Let's go, Mo.
0.5, 0.6, and 2/3.
Yes.
Lovely.
So 0.5 is when you're comparing pleural fluid protein to serum protein ratio.
Yep.
0.6 is pleural fluid LDH compared with serum LDH ratio, and pleural fluid LDH greater than 2/3 of the upper limit of normal serum LDH. Those are a few things you just have to remember.
Like I just remembered the numbers.
There's no other. 0.5, 0.6, 2/3. And exudative effusion is like, they have higher levels of those.
0.5, 0.6, 0.6.
That's actually pretty good.
It's a good one. It's quick.
Yeah.
Cool.
Cool. Any questions, Dan? Come on. Surely I've got something wrong with you. Wanting to comment. Come on, say it.
No. It's all good. It's all good.
Awesome. So thank you very much, guys. We are now on multiple podcast channels. So choose your podcast app, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music. Not YouTube Music yet, but love to see you there soon. See you guys soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode this week on 1PM. Feel free to check out our Anki flashcards and our Notion document. You can also check out 1pm.wiki for more information. We'll see you next time.